Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, May 27th. Speaker says, market fundamentals support $70 to $80 oil this year. Energy investment banker also stated supply outages could result in triple-digit prices. The story was written by Mel McEwen. Traders have been upbeat about crude prices this year, sending them from a negative $38 a barrel last April to $66 this week. But an investment banker believes the outlook for oil prices is even more bullish than current futures prices suggest. Addressing an energy outlook breakfast presented by Van Piercy Wealth Service team, Marshall Adkins, head of Raymond James Energy Investment Banking, told his audience oil prices over the next 18 months should rise to between $70 and $80 a barrel. Quote, but they never stop at the right prices, going up or down, he said. They may overshoot, end quote. In fact, Adkins said, global oil supplies are expected to be so tight by mid-2022 that every member of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, including troubled nations like Iran and Libya, must be producing at maximum capacity with no outages. Quote, but there will be outages, and that's when prices could hit triple digits again, he said. There are a number of reasons for his bullishness, as he detailed for those attending his presentation at the Petroleum Club. One is the damage done to the nation's oil and gas industry, not only by the pandemic, but over the past several years, as investors have stayed away from the industry because of low returns or because of environmental concerns. Quote, oil is the new tobacco, he declared, noting how tobacco was shunned after the landmark multi-billion-dollar judgment against it in the 1990s. But after the settlement, he noted that tobacco stocks rose 20 times more than the overall market over the next 15 years. Quote, they were starved for capital and started giving cash back to shareholders, Adkins continued. Oil companies are doing the same, returning cash flow to shareholders in the form of dividends or stock buybacks rather than growing production. As oil companies start generating returns of 10 to 15%, he predicted money managers will again invest. Quote, at the end of the day, they are in business to make money, he said. Much of the investment dollars will find their way into the Permian Basin, he said, because it is the most important producing basin both nationally and internationally, he said. Quote, the Permian Basin has been the single most significant support of the economy, he said. Look at the balance of payments and the impact on the economy of low energy costs. Lower energy costs is a huge deal, end quote. Another reason for his optimism is the recovery in demand and the fact excess supplies have been taken off the market, leading to an undersupplied market and falling inventories. Adkins predicted a demand surge will accelerate over the next 6 months. Finally, he said production capacity for members of OPEC and their allied nations like Russia will be maxed out in the next 6 to 12 months. Quote, this puts Saudi Arabia in the driver's seat by the end of the year. Everybody but the Saudis will be at maximum capacity, and it will be up to the Saudis to decide how much they want to produce to keep prices in check, he said. It will take oil prices at $70 or above for U.S. production to begin to grow again, he said. The nation's output can return to where it was in January 2020 before the pandemic, quote, but only if oil is $75 or $80. Even then, I'm not sure we can get back to 13 million barrels a day, not for the next 3 years. End quote. New collaboration. PSP, Road Safety Coalition, hold event for life-saving equipment initiative. The Permian Strategic Partnership and the Permian Road Safety Coalition held a kickoff event for its collaborative first responder life-saving equipment initiative Wednesday at the Northeast Midland Volunteer Fire Department at 3810 North County Road 1130. The PSP and PRSC previously announced this $1.1 million donation of life-saving equipment to first responders in 22 counties across West Texas and Southeast New Mexico. The partnership with PSP allows PRSC to expand its initiative that began in early 2020, with PRSC's initial investment of more than $250,000 in donated equipment. First responding agencies, many of whom are staffed by volunteers, have limited infrastructure and resources that were designed only to respond to local jurisdictions with small populations of less than 10,000, according to a news release. It is not unusual now to see responders travel over an hour by road to respond to calls for assistance. The increase in call volume, coupled with longer response times due to extra miles driven, has the potential to delay emergency services responses and, in some cases, delay the delivery of critical emergency response tools required at the scene. Through this partnering, emergency equipment such as battery-powered jaws of life, fire extinguishers, mobile lighting tools, and rescue helicopter landing zone kits and related training will be provided to first-on-scene local responders or pre-positioned closer to the remote activity areas in need of these resources. First responder agencies receiving equipment are located in the following 22 counties: Andrews, Borden, Crane, Culberson, Dawson, Ector, Gaines, Glasscock, Howard, Loving, Martin, Midland, Pecos, Reagan, Reeves, Terrell, Upton, Ward, Winkler, and Yoakum counties in Texas, and Eddy and Lee counties in New Mexico. U.S. wildlife managers propose protections for rare chicken. The story was written by Susan Montoya Bryan with the Associated Press. U.S. wildlife managers on Wednesday proposed federal protections for the lesser prairie chicken, saying its habitat across five states is in danger of becoming more fragmented, and the effects of climate change and drought are expected to take a further toll on the species in the future. Once listed as a threatened species, the chicken's habitat spans parts of New Mexico, Colorado, Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas, including a portion of the oil-rich Permian Basin. Environmentalists have been pushing to reinstate federal protections for years. They consider the species severely threatened, citing lost and fragmented habitat as the result of oil and gas development, livestock grazing, farming, and the building of roads and power lines. Federal officials are proposing to list the southern population in eastern New Mexico and the southern reaches of the Texas Panhandle as endangered, and those birds in the northern part of the species range as threatened. The public will have 60 days to comment on the proposal. Two virtual public meetings will be held in July. It could be a year before federal officials make a final determination. Once thought to number in the millions, federal officials said the five-year average population across the entire range hovers around 27,000 individual birds. Landowners and the oil and gas industry say they have had success with voluntary conservation programs aimed at protecting habitat and boosting the birds' numbers. The Western Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies, which oversees the conservation effort, reported last fall that the population grew to an estimated 34,400, up from a low of about 15,400 in 2013. A group of U.S. senators sent a letter last week to federal officials urging them not to list the bird, saying a designation under the Endangered Species Act would undermine the ongoing conservation work in the five states. Senator Jim Imhoff of Oklahoma and his fellow Republican lawmakers pointed out that more than 9,375 square miles are covered by conservation agreements, and industry participants have contributed more than $64 million in enrollment and mitigation fees that have helped to boost the bird's population. U.S. Senator Roger Marshall of Kansas suggested that the proposed listing favors government overreach and heavy-handed regulation over cooperation with landowners. Quote, "Today's announcement will hurt our state's economy, hinder our oil and gas independence, increase utility costs, and prevent the development of renewable energy in prime western Kansas locations," he said. If the agency decides to list the species, officials said landowners and oil companies already participating in the conservation program wouldn't be affected because they already are taking steps to protect habitat. However, a listing would prevent any activities that result in the loss or degradation of existing habitat. Energy companies and ranchers have concerns, but environmentalists applauded Wednesday's announcement, saying a listing is overdue. The species regulatory history dates back to an initial petition for protection in 1995. The Fish and Wildlife Service in 2014 classified the bird as a threatened species, but the agency was forced to remove it from the list 2 years later following court rulings that determined the agency failed to properly consider the voluntary conservation efforts. The year the bird was listed, Kansas enacted a law saying that the state had the sole power to regulate the lesser prairie chicken, along with the larger, darker, and more abundant greater prairie chicken and their habitats within Kansas. It authorized the attorney general or county prosecutors to sue over federal attempts to impose conservation measures. While federal officials acknowledge that there's always a chance for more litigation, agency biologist Clay Nichols said the consideration was given to the conservation program this time around by assessing the benefits of ongoing projects and what future benefits they might have. Quote, "The current threats acting in the landscape are expected to either continue at the same levels or increase in severity in the foreseeable future," he said. "Habitat loss is projected to outpace conservation efforts to restore habitat," end quote. Nichols also pointed to drought, noting that the population in the southern range dropped to as few as 1,000 birds in 2015 because of severe dry conditions, and that drought across the region has persisted, leaving the population in a precarious situation. Don't miss Memorial Day weekend events. The story was written by J.C. Lewis. Staying in Midland over the holiday weekend, here are top events from the weekend schedule. The Doug Russell Aquatic Center and Washington Family Aquatic Center open Saturday for Memorial Day weekend and remain open for the season. The hours of the Doug Russell Center are noon to 7 p.m. Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and 1 to 8 p.m. on Sunday. The hours for Washington Center are noon to 7 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday, and 1 to 8 p.m. on Sunday. Family nights will be from 7 to 9 p.m. Tuesdays at Washington and 7 to 9 p.m. Thursdays at Doug Russell. Synergy Midland will open from 3 p.m. to midnight Friday, 10 a.m. to midnight Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 a.m. Sunday, and 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Monday. The movies featured are A Quiet Place Part 2, Cruella, Fast Five, Those Who Wish Me Dead, Finding You, Spiral, Wrath of Man, Mortal Kombat, Godzilla vs. Kong, and Raya and the Last Dragon. The movie theater also will have $5 movies and $5 Patriot frozen cocktails on Memorial Day. Check availability for the special at Synergy.com. Chris Knight and Will Bannister, 8 p.m. Friday at the Rusty Bucket Barbecue and Tavern. Museum of the Southwest September Fest is coming back. The story was written by J.C. Lewis. Artists can now apply for this year's return of Septemberfest. The theme is Under the Desert Sky, and the online application is now live. The deadline to apply is July 2nd. The event will also have a Friday night preview party on September 10th. The preview party will be a private, ticketed event. The festival will be from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. on September 11th. Septemberfest is made possible by sponsors Lisa Noel Wagner, Mary B. Kennedy, Kay Bird, and Nancy Gibson.
Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday, May 27th. Odessa Man Facing Four Charges for January Capitol Riots, by Caitlin Randall. Vic Don Williams of Odessa was arrested last week and is facing four charges related to the January 6th U.S. Capitol riots, according to an arrest affidavit. Williams was identified after the FBI received several tips that he had posted live footage admitting to his involvement on social media. He also shared a photo of himself at the riots with a caption saying, "We are not terrorists, sick, we are America," and tagged his location at the Capitol. FBI investigators interviewed Williams in his Odessa home on February 10th, at which time he admitted to being on the steps of the Capitol, but denied entering the building. The affidavit notes that Williams owns a roasting company and at the conclusion of the interview gave two bags of coffee to the interviewing agents. Law enforcement officers later obtained surveillance footage that shows Williams inside the Capitol, according to the affidavit. Photos in the affidavit show Williams walking through a door of the Capitol, while others enter through a broken window. He is also seen walking with a crowd through the building and recording on his cell phone. In an 18-minute video uploaded to Facebook, Williams details how he climbed up a wall and scaffolding to access the front door of the Capitol building. He says there was smoke everywhere and explosions going off. Law enforcement submitted a preservation letter and subpoena to Facebook to review Williams' account, which was deleted after the riots. Facebook provided the requested information on April 12th. Williams has been charged with entering or remaining in restricted grounds, engaging in disorderly conduct on restricted grounds, and two counts of violent entry and disorderly conduct on Capitol grounds. The misdemeanor charges carry a penalty of up to 3 years in prison. Williams was arrested May 21st, according to court records. An initial court appearance has not been set. He is the third person from the Midland-Odessa area charged in connection to the Capitol riots. PBPA surprised by a decision to possibly list lesser prairie chicken, by Mella McEwen. Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, expressed both disappointment and surprise at the announcement of the proposed federal protections for the lesser prairie chicken, noting that the PBPA has been working with the Fish and Wildlife Service on the issue for a decade. There are well over 100 companies enrolled in a candidate conservation agreement with assurances, 5 million acres enrolled, and over $60 million spent on conservation, primarily from oil and gas, Shepard told the Reporter-Telegram by telephone. More importantly, the population of the lesser prairie chicken has more than doubled under the CCAA. Despite that, the Fish and Wildlife Service has determined an endangered listing is merited. He noted that the plan calls for the five-state region that is the animal's habitat, Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, Oklahoma, and Kansas to be divided into the North region, where the chicken would be listed as threatened, and the South region, where it would be listed as endangered. Once the 60-day comment period begins, with the decision is published in the Federal Register, either Friday or next week, Shepard said he is confident he and PBPA members can submit comments demonstrating that a listing is not needed.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, May 27th, 2021. Community calendar. Events and activities. 63rd Annual Permian Basin Juried Art Exhibition opening reception, 6 p.m. Thursday at the Ellen Knoll Art Museum. Knit and Stitch, 6 p.m. June 3rd at the Ellen Knoll Art Museum. LO Street Market, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. June 5th at Centennial Park. Summer Reading Kickoff, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. June 5th at Centennial Library. Basin Brews and Chews, June 5th at the Beer Garden. Bronco Reveal Party, 10 a.m. June 9th at Sewell Ford. Keys for Hope Clay Shoot Fundraiser, benefiting Gifts of Hope, June 18th at Midland Shooters Association. Windy City Golf Tournament, 8 a.m. June 18th at Hogan Park, a senior life event. Keys for Hope Dinner and Cocktails featuring Dueling Pianos by Felix and Fingers, June 18th at Bush Convention Center. Call Gifts of Hope at 432-218-8714 or visit giftsofhopetx.org for more information. Con Live, Toy and Collectible Expo, Odessa, 10 a.m. June 19th at the Ector County Coliseum. Star Spangled Salute, 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. July 3rd at Centennial Park in Midland. Trains, Grains, and Tomatoes, 2 p.m. July 8th at Centennial Library. Community Fest, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. July 23rd and 24th at the MLK Community Center. Back to School Pop Spot, July 29th through 31st at Bush Convention Center. Medesanami, July 20th through August 1st, Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center. Book Talk, 6 p.m., July 22nd, at the Ellen Knoll Art Museum. Nonprofits. Kids Farmers Market, 10 a.m., June 5th, at West Texas Food Bank. Center's Classic Golf Tournament, 1 p.m. June 8th at Ranchland Hills Golf Club. Aim to End Hunger for West Texas Food Bank, 8 a.m. June 10th at Midland Shooters Association. 5 Centuries of Mexican Maps, June 10th to August 15th at the Museum of the Southwest. Fertile Valley, the Taos Society of Artists and Their Influence, June 22nd to October 3rd at the Museum of the Southwest. Katie Marotta, The Long Horizon, July 10th to October 3rd at the Museum of the Southwest. Show of Support Clay Shoot, July 30th at Windwalker Farms. Entertainment calendar. Chris Knight, 8 p.m. Friday at the Rusty Bucket Barbecue and Tavern. Reed Southall Band, 8 p.m. June 3rd at Rusty Bucket Barbecue and Tavern. 55th Annual West Texas Jazz Party, June 3rd through 5th at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center. West Texas Jazz Party, Hot Summer Nights, 8 to 10 p.m., June 4th at the Ector Theater. Los Dos Carnales, 7 p.m., June 4th at La Hacienda Event Center. Robert Earl Keane, 8 p.m., June 5th at Rusty Bucket Barbecue and Tavern. Midland Airs, 7 p.m., June 6th, The Lawn Concert at Museum of the Southwest. Cody Johnson, June 11th, at the Horseshoe. Cesar Ornelas Law, Mextex Family Fiesta, June 12th, at Centennial Park. Kyle Park, 8 p.m., June 12th, at Rusty Bucket Barbecue and Tavern. Small Town Cover Story, 7 p.m., June 13th, The Lawn Concert at Museum of the Southwest. Grupo Legitimo, 8 p.m., June 18th at La Hacienda Event Center. Josh Abbott Band, 7 p.m., June 18th at La Hacienda Event Center. Cedric the Entertainer, 7 p.m., June 19th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Unsweet Teas, 7 p.m., June 20th, at the Lawn Concert at Museum of the Southwest. Steak Night, featuring Angel and the Bad Men, 6 p.m., June 24th, at Max Barbecue and Catering. ZZ Top, 8 p.m., June 25th, at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Matt Kimbrough, 8 p.m., June 26th, at the Rusty Bucket Barbecue and Tavern. Dirty Glass, 7 p.m., June 27th, at the Lawn Concert at Museum of the Southwest. Colby Cooper, 8 p.m., July 2nd, at Rusty Bucket Barbecue and Tavern. Aaron Lewis, 7 p.m., July 3rd, at La Hacienda Event Center. Weatherstone, 7 p.m., July 11th, at the Lawn Concert at Museum of the Southwest. The Bellamy Brothers, 7:30 p.m., July 17th, at Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Tall City Band, 7 p.m., July 18th, at the Lawn Concert at Museum of the Southwest. Celebration of the Arts, 2021, July 16th through 18th at the Bush Convention Center. Angie and the Bad Men, 7 p.m., July 25th at the Lawn Concert at the Museum of the Southwest. Regular meetings and activities. Healing Yoga for People Recuperating from Cancer, 5:30 p.m. Monday at Yoga Sanctuary, 4202 Dawn Circle, Midland. Party on the Patio, 7 to 11 p.m. Fridays at Ranchland Hills Golf Club. Downtown Farmers Markets, 8 a.m. to noon Saturday at the Museum of the Southwest. Family Fridays, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. June 4th, June 11th, June 18th, June 25th, July 9th, July 16th, and July 23rd at the Museum of the Southwest. Summer Mummers, 7:30 p.m., June 4th through September 4th, every Friday and Saturday at the Yucca Theater in Midland. Parks Legado Farmers Markets, 8 a.m. to noon, June 12th, July 10th, August 14th, and September 11th at Parks Legado Town Center. A Year with Frog and Toad, July 8th through 19th at Midland Community Theater. Movies in the Park. The dates and locations for the movies will be Sonic the Hedgehog, June 4th, Hill Park. Aladdin, June 18th, Dennis the Menace Park. Frozen 2, July 9th, C.J. Kelly Park. Onward, July 23rd, Beale Park. Trolls World Tour, August 6th, Hogan Park. Toy Story 4, August 20th, Centennial Park. Each movie will start at dusk. Don't forget your lawn chairs. For a complete list of movies in the park, please visit midlandtexas.gov/movies. Note, anyone with contributions to the Community Roundup can send them to sdoreen@hearstnp.com.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, May 27th. Dr. Delilah Lorraine Anderson Diggs, age 72, of Big Spring, passed away on May 16th in Midland. Visitation will be Friday, May 28th, from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m., and wake from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Branford Dawson Funeral Home in Temple, Texas. Funeral service to be held Saturday, May 29th, at 11 a.m. at 8th Street Baptist Church in Temple. Interment to be held at Temple Garden of Memories in Temple, Texas. Delilah was born on March 7, 1949, in Temple, Texas, to Liren and Francis C. Anderson. Survivors include one sister, Sheridan L. Anderson of Big Spring, aunts Julia Anna Kismet Rogers of Tucson, Arizona, and Ski Anderson of Newport, Rhode Island, nephew and spouse Thomas D. and Lily Rory of Temple, Texas, a niece, Dr. Michelle Y. Rory of Nashville, Tennessee, and a host of cousins and friends. Memorial guestbook may be signed at www.branforddawsonfuneralhome.com. Joan D. Braden, age 85, of Midland, passed away on December 11, 2020. Celebration of life will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, May 29th, at Grace Lutheran Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Mayor seeks clergy push for ordinance. Sprawls says Hoven's remarks about his wife are not true. By Federico Martinez. FMARTINEZ at OAOA.com. Odessa City Councilman Tom Sprawls on Wednesday said he was disappointed that Mayor Javier Hoven made disparaging and false remarks about his spouse during a recent Zoom meeting where the mayor urged local clergy to pressure Sprawls and other council members into passing an ordinance that would make Odessa a sanctuary city for the unborn. Hoven made his plea to local clergy during a Zoom meeting on May 17th. During a meeting, Hoven claimed that Sprawls' wife was pressuring him to not support the proposed ordinance. "We're one vote away from passing it," Hoven said. "The one vote I have been waiting for has basically said, I'm not going to vote. His wife doesn't want, will not allow him to vote yes, and that is Sprawls," Hoven said. Sprawls, who did not participate in the Zoom meeting, but did review a video of the Zoom on Wednesday, denied Hoven's allegations. "I'm disappointed that he brought my family into my political position," Sprawls said. "Maybe if I was a president or governor, that would be acceptable, but it was not necessary at this level. But I'm not upset. This is politics and comes with the territory. It's part of what he's doing." During the Zoom meeting, Hoven asked local clergy to submit a joint letter to council and mobilize their congregation to lobby council members, especially Sprawls, to pass the abortion ordinance. "I think a concerted effort by our community to bring it to the council and ask the council to put it on the agenda for them to consider and give us a clear indication where the council publicly stands, either for or against," Hovind said. Hovind acknowledged that four council members, Mari Willis, Steve Thompson, Deidre White, and Sprouls, have already indicated that they won't vote for the ordinance. Hovind and council members Denise Swanner and Mark Mata have voiced support. The mayor, who questioned the Christian faith of the four council members who opposed the ordinance, also claimed that Sprouls has indicated to him that he wants to support the ordinance, but that his wife opposes the ordinance. Later during the Zoom meeting, Hovind again claimed Sprouls won't support the ordinance because he's afraid of raising his wife's ire. Sprouls is the swing vote, and he is dragging his heels because he would have to answer to his spouse and will not do that, Hovind said. Sprouls denied Hovind's claims about his wife during a series of phone interviews. I don't know where the hell that came from, Sprouls said. I don't remember ever talking to the mayor about my wife. My wife has never spoken to him. I've never spoken to him about this issue. Sprouls was incensed that Hovind and his supporters continued to question the faith of some council members. I'm very disappointed in what I've read and heard about questioning our salvation and relationship with God, Sprouls said. If we're going to judge people's Christianity, I would refer to Matthew 7, 1 and 2. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. So who's judging here? I have a very firm relationship with God. Sprouls said although he personally is opposed to abortion, the issue is more complicated than some people want to make it. Nobody wants to see babies murdered, Sprouls said. It's easy to say what you'd do, but until you get faced with that situation, it becomes a more difficult situation. Councilman Steve Thompson said this week that he remains opposed to adopting an abortion ordinance. He says the issue is a federal issue and not a local issue. Thompson pointed out that other Texas communities that have passed the abortion ordinance have faced lawsuits, a cost Odessa can't afford. I haven't changed my opinion, said Thompson, who pointed out that Lubbock, which recently adopted the ordinance, is now facing multiple lawsuits. Hovind has repeatedly claimed since taking office that abortions are taking place in Odessa, but has not provided any evidence of that. Local health officials have said that legal abortions have not occurred in Odessa in over a decade. The mayor repeated his claims during his Zoom meeting with clergy. The community has come and asked me about looking into sanctuary cities for the unborn, for the reason that they, abortions, are being conducted in the city of Odessa in a private manner, Hovind said. Hovind said he is reluctant to place the abortion issue before council for a vote anytime soon because he knows it will face certain defeat. In January, Hovind asked council to consider the ordinance during a work session, and White, Willis, Sprouls, and Thompson stated they would not support it. Hovind said at the time he would bring the issue back to council at a later date. Hovind, during the Zoom, said some council members are voicing opposition to the ordinance because they think I'm trying to push this on them. I'm telling them, this is not my agenda. This is something God has tasked me with, and I will see it through. The mayor said pursuing a public vote is a last resort. An election would cost taxpayers more than $100,000 to hold, Hovind said. It would also take about 1 year to schedule, he added. A campaign is a lot of work. It's hard work, said Hovind, who noted it would take at least 7,000 signatures to get the ordinance issue on the ballot. Hovind said if the issue would be on a future ballot, the pro-choice movement would go to task. If the community doesn't turn out, the other side can and will, Hovind said. Losing this in a public forum would be a huge setback for our area. And then I have a split council that would turn around and say, "See, I told you so." Hovind, during the Zoom, said his efforts are also being thwarted by city administrators and staff. We have a very, very liberal bureaucratic staff here in the city of Odessa, Hovind said. Sproul said it's ironic that Hovind, Mata, and Swanner are opposed to holding a public vote for the abortion ordinance, but are lobbying the council to hold a public vote to decide whether to renovate the city's aging water plant. "Sometimes what they say and do doesn't make a lot of sense," Sproul said. Sproul said he would still be in favor of a public vote on the abortion ordinance, but he would not vote in favor of an ordinance. "It would be an ordinance chasing a problem we don't have," Sproul said. "We don't need that." Hovind has also made other comments about his peers on council and city staff. After being elected in December, Hovind blamed the city's director of communications, Devin Sanchez, for not alerting the public that he, Swanner, and Mata were being sworn into office. After being informed that Sanchez was not at work because her father had died, he still questioned her professionalism and insisted she was intentionally trying to cast him in a negative light. He has also accused city administrators and staff of trying to undermine him as mayor. According to the City Council's own Code of Conduct ordinances, the professional and personal conduct of council members while exercising their office must be above reproach and avoid any sense or appearance of impropriety. Council members shall refrain from abusive conduct or verbal attacks upon the character or motives of other council members, council appointees, boards, and committees, the staff, or public. Hovind also complained about the Odessa American during the Zoom call, claiming that the publication was trying to rush him into placing the ordinance on the agenda because it would be defeated 4-3. Want to see the Zoom? Click here, tinyur.com/F446SB26. The next step. Jacob Ford, Odessa American. George H.W. Bush, New Tech, Odessa's valedictorian, Natalie Jones, 18, left, and salutatorian, Yasmin Hernandez, 18, stand for a portrait in the school's cafeteria. Jones is planning on attending University of Texas Permian Basin to study education, and Hernandez is planning on attending the University of Houston to study business, so she can own a therapy practice. NTO Top 2 Optimistic About the Future by Ruth Campbell, RCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. For most of their lives, George H.W. Bush, New Tech Odessa seniors Natalie Jones and Yasmin Hernandez have been top students. Now, Jones has been named valedictorian and Hernandez salutatorian. NTO's commencement is scheduled for 7 p.m. today at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Jones, 18, plans to attend the University of Texas Permian Basin to study general education and become a teacher. Hernandez plans to attend the University of Houston to major in psychology and business with the goal of becoming a therapist. Jones, who is in the Future Teachers Program through ECISD's Career and Technical Education Program, could potentially be an elementary or physical education teacher, or possibly a high school coach teaching history or English. Her mother, Molly Jones, has been an educator for about 20 years and is currently a counselor at Ross Elementary School. "School has always been very easy for me, so I got my transcript one day freshman year, and I expected to be like number three or something, because that's what I was in middle school. And I got it, and I'm like, oh, look at that. I'm number one. There were a few moments where it was on and off, but it was never really something that was hard for me. It just kind of happened, I guess. A happy little accident, Jones said. The idea of graduation for Jones is terrifying and exciting at the same time, because it means I'm going to be in the world, and I'm not ready for that. But it's also exciting because it's such a freeing moment where I can go off and I can learn to do things on my own, and I can be who I want to be, and I can set a life for myself and for my future, Jones said. She has two younger sisters. Hernandez, 18, said she thinks being salutatorian is pretty cool. I've done good in school my whole life, partially because my mom has always made me, but I think it feels nice to have that, to just say that. So many years of school did something for me, she said. Hernandez said being salutatorian might not be significant after high school, but it's meaningful right now. It's something for my family because most of them haven't gone to college, Hernandez said. She added that it's a big deal for her family to see her reach this milestone, especially her younger cousins. They see that we can do it, and it'll be harder, but we can do it, Hernandez said. She has an older brother and a younger sister. This past year, they had three younger cousins move in, so now Hernandez said she has four younger siblings. I am definitely an example for them. My brother didn't go to college, but he's been doing good after high school. But for my younger siblings, like my two younger sisters, one of them is going to come to high school next year, and then the other one will be in eighth grade. So I think it helped them a lot to see it's not that hard to go through it. They'll be okay, and my mom has always said, look at what your sister's doing, Hernandez said. She added that she is ready to graduate. I've enjoyed my 4 years of high school, for the most part, but I'm ready to figure out what's happening next, she said. ECISD graduation schedule, TINYURL.com/TP4CAZ38. The Iceman Cometh, retired agent speaks to ECRW. Photo by Ruth Campbell, Odessa American. Retired supervisory special agent with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Homeland Security Investigations, Victor Avila, speaks during the Ector County Republican Women meeting Wednesday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. OA News at OAOA.com. Retired supervisory special agent with the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Homeland Security Investigations, Victor Avila, wants to raise awareness about a fellow agent, Jaime Zapata, who died at the hands of the Los Zetas drug cartel while on assignment. The ambush occurred February 15, 2011, in San Luis Potos, Mexico. He told his story during the Ector County Republican Women meeting Wednesday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Avila has written a book titled Agent Under Fire, A Murder and a Manifesto. Avila and Zapata were set to go down Highway 57. Agents were prohibited from driving down that highway by strict orders from the U.S. ambassador. Avila said you needed written consent from the ambassador to drive down it. He challenged the assignment, but his superiors ignored his concerns. Mexico, he said, is categorized at level 4, the highest risk level, just like Afghanistan or Iraq. They had no police escort, no other U.S. agents. They made contact with agents in Monterey to pick up boxes of tracking devices and electronic surveillance equipment for a money laundering case. We're driving back. We stopped to have lunch. And after lunch, I gave the keys to Jaime Zapata, and I tell him to help me drive. I was in the process of putting together a human trafficking conference and takedowns, Avila said. While Zapata was driving, Avila was going to catch up on work, so he called his supervisor and gave him their location and an estimated time of arrival to Mexico City. Avila said he would take over from there because the traffic would be so bad and Zapata had never driven an armored vehicle before. And so we head off, and within 15 minutes, two SUVs are on our tail. They basically push us off and force us off to the side of the road. AK-47's out, and they start pushing us off. They push us off to the side, and through all the chaos and the commotion, my window was lowered by 2 inches. They were able to introduce an AK-47 and a handgun here by my head, and I raised the window and caught the barrel of both guns and tried to wiggle them out of there. Without notice, they opened fire into the cabin of the Suburban, striking, especially to Jaime Zapata, several times, lethally on his left leg with an AK-47 round. I got shot 3 times, once in the chest and twice in my left leg, Avila said. During the commotion, Avila said, they tried to identify themselves. There are 8 shooters pointing AK-47s and long guns at them. Avila said he yelled at the top of his lungs that they were Americans, U.S. Embassy employees, and U.S. diplomats, and this was a diplomatic vehicle. He tells the shooters they are confusing him and Zapata with someone else. They're shouting back in Spanish, telling them to get out of the car and open the door. When the shots rang, I was able to raise the window, and they shot over 100 rounds at the Suburban. I had Special Agent Jaime Zapata, who was already becoming unresponsive. I pressed his leg onto the gas. I put the Suburban in gear and crashed one of their SUVs that was blocking us, and then I was trying to get the Suburban back on the highway, but it just rolled onto the median. And that's where it ended up. The SUVs take off, but one of them does a U-turn, comes back, parks right in front of the Suburban. 2 shooters come out with AK-47s. They stand right in front and just shoot and try to penetrate the glass. And so I'm standing here before you by the grace of God, Avila said. He was able to make a distress call to the embassy and went through a number of channels he got to someone he trusted, and they dispatched a helicopter. The helicopter took them to the hospital in San Luis Potosí. Avila said he wouldn't take any treatment while there because he thought the cartels were going to finish him off while he was there. I was fighting the staff, and I didn't care. I didn't tell him who I was. Not until the reinforcements of the Mexican Federal Police that they were sending, the trusted sources that eventually surrounded the hospital and made it secure, that I kind of went off on the staff and I said, "My name is Victor Avila. I'm an American, and I get chills when I tell you that because you see me, I'm Hispanic. My parents are from Mexico. I'm a first-generation American, but I was a foreigner in that country. I did not belong there, and it felt terrible. It felt lonely that your own heritage, your own country, would feel that way. For all intents and purposes, I could have been in China. That's how I felt." Avila said he was eventually told that Zapata had died. This all happened under the Obama administration, and the unfortunate circumstances that my family and I had to go through because of that administration. You'll read it and you'll be angered by that because people ask me which one was worse, the shooting or the aftermath, and I had to think about it. That's how bad the aftermath was. Avila also gave a presentation on conditions at the border, both in the Mission/McAllen area and at El Paso, which is wide open. At the Mission/McAllen area, Avila showed slides of men, women, and children, but in the El Paso area, it was a video of men running across the desert. Avila said he talked to Border Patrol agents in the valley, and they were beyond overwhelmed. He said they just want to do their jobs. They didn't want to be caretakers or processors. He said people are either going straight into McAllen or El Paso. If they test positive for COVID-19, they are sent to a hotel to quarantine, and if they're negative, they go to Catholic Charities, where they are given necessities and some money and can get a bus or plane ticket without ID. He said they aren't DNA tested, so they don't know if the children are with their parents. Avila urged people to get involved in politics at the local level because that's where the most change can be made, then work their way to the state and national level. 481 days. For 481 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through January 6th, the city has spent $112,138.47 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County, 17,398 total cases, 376 deaths. ECISD daily cases, 1 student, 0 staff. Midland County, 17,614 total cases, 271 deaths. Texas, 2,946,793 total cases, 51,288 deaths. U.S. cases, 32,994,369 total confirmed, and 588,421 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Quick hits. Annual Calaveras event. The Time Bandits of Kerrville have scheduled the second annual Monahan's Calaveras event at 8 p.m. Saturday at the Million Barrel Museum, 400 East 4th Street, Monahan's. There will be bike games, jumpers, vendors, and live music. Visit tinyurl.com/2CNT92RF. Summer Day Camp. Campfire West Texas will be providing a summer day camp for children aged 5 to 12 years old at Gonzales Elementary School, 2700 Disney Street. The summer day camp will be open from 7:45 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., June 1st through July 30th. The summer day camp will cost $90 for the week per child, and children will need to bring their lunch. A morning and afternoon snack will be provided for each child, along with games, trips, sports, and many more fun, supervised activities. No child will be turned away because of financial need. Financial assistance is available based on family size and income levels. For more information, call Campfire West Texas at 570-4144. Dog Days of Summer. Rescuers Without Borders, a nonprofit animal rescue, has scheduled Dog Days of Summer event from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. June 19th at the Goldsmith Community Center and Park in Goldsmith. There will be raffles, food, vendors, and more. Vendors welcomed. Setup fee is a $20 donation to the rescue. Vendors can pay $20 donation to PayPal Rescuers Without Borders at yahoo.com. Note, it is to be a vendor in the PayPal memo section. Reunion. The 2nd Indian Head Division Association is seeking service members who served in the Army's 2nd Infantry Division at any time for its 99th annual reunion, September 29th through October 3rd, in Kansas City, Missouri. For more information, contact Bob Haynes at 224-225-1202 or email 2idahq@comcast.net or visit www.2ida.org. From Staff Reports. Closing prices. Posted $62.69. Futures $66.21. Natural gas $2.984. Benchmark U.S. rose 14 cents to $66.21 per barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.